Welcome to the Digital Forester Podcast, where we talk to foresters about how they are using digital technologies in their day-to-day forestry work. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Digital Forester Podcast. Today, I am joined by Mark Books. He's the Geospatial Services Manager at Landmark Spatial Solutions. Mark, how are you doing?
Doing well. Good to be. Thanks for having me, Kevin.
Yeah, absolutely. So you and I have known each other for a long time. So we're gonna have a lot of fun on this as we were kind of catching up before the podcast recording started. You know, we were talking about cruising and geography and how both of us just didn't seem to enjoy cruising that much. So that gave me an idea, just kind of on the spur of the moment. Maybe I'll do like a live Digital Forester podcast and drag you kicking and screaming onto the boat. But maybe some margaritas will solve that problem. But again, it's like or a soda pop for you in that case. But good to see you. So maybe to kick things off, like, why don't you introduce yourself and how you got into forestry? Because you are a true digital forester.
I am. And thanks for that opportunity. So forestry is an amazing adventure. I think an adventure maybe is a key word about, you know, how I got there and just kind of stepping out in faith about where do I get my education and what do I want to do for a living. So a couple of things came into play. Oftentimes, how many times, Kevin, are we at the Esri user conference and they're being interviewed on the main stage, and time and again, the National Geographic maps come up, right? So very, very impactful. And I think for me, I've always been a map person. And those maps in particular are great maps. And as I was thinking about it, maybe it's because as a boy needing adventure, there was an element of adventure in those maps, right? So I think that played a key role. And also just fortunate hanging out with my grandparents and one in particular, grew up in Ohio, spent a lot of time with family in West Virginia. And going back on those car trips with my granddad and I'd be the navigator. So I'd always have a map. And as we go, it wasn't just about directions. It's like, well, what's over that hill and different things like that. And so getting to explore West Virginia, you know, with the excuse of trying to catch a few trout, had a pretty big home range between Seneca Rocks and Williams River and the family history and just being exposed to trees and just seeing it from a kid's point of view that, hey, I'm fishing for this species that demands clean and cold water, and it's being filtered by all these trees and seeing change over time. And so, but I was also encouraged too. I never really considered myself necessarily a college student. It wasn't anything about the public schools I went to. They did a great job. I think it was me leaving a lot on the table, but, you know, you get a lot of wisdom, whether you want it or not, from people who care about you. And so my granddad said, well, you know, Mark, what are you going to do when your back gives out doing manual labor all your life? I'm like, oh, well, you got a good point, right? So so we stepped out on that journey of, you know, forestry kind of came into the picture clearer and clearer. And this will probably come back in our conversations like, well, yeah, we can serve society and we don't have to talk to people. We can go out in the woods, right? And at that time, and, you know, becoming the new old guy, and I'm embracing that. But, you know, in the 80s, you know, wearing a tie was a big deal. And in the professional world, it's like, well, man, if I can go into forestry, I don't wear a tie. But
What is this thing you call a tie? I don't know what that is.
Exactly. So
well, that's very cool. So I don't know if your granddad is still around, but I wonder if I was to ask him the question of how good was Mark a navigator, I wonder if he would be corroborating your navigation skills or maybe having a different story. But maybe that will be one.
That's a great question. Yeah.
So that's very cool. And so you went to school at Michigan Technological University, and you pursued not just a bachelor degree, but you also pursued a master's. So you kind of touched on the whole schooling side, and so tell me that journey. How did that come about, and how did you pick that particular school to start your journey?
That's a good one too. So you know, I tell people that I'd be very careful being from Ohio. You know, it's sort of your destiny to graduate from the Ohio State University, and props to that. It's a great school, no questions about it, right? you know, and so on your birth certificates, you know, this is a little facetious, but how serious they take the school is, you know, your parents' information, your information when you're born, and, you know, your graduation date from the Ohio State University, right? And and so while economically it really would have been a better option, you know, learning about trees in the middle of a cornfield, maybe not the best, but really to me, I wanted to go to a school with not 70,000 other people. So it was just more of a size thing. And so I examined a lot of the schools around me, of course, you know, Penn State, WVU, Purdue, and they were all great schools. And for one reason or another, stepped down in faith, led to Michigan Tech. But I went there by way of Northland College in Ashland, Wisconsin, because they had a dual degree program. And I'm like, you know what? A couple advantages of this. We had a connection to some of the people lived in the community in Ashland, which is very, you know, if you're going to travel 800 miles away to school, it's kind of nice to have some connections, right? I was seeking adventure, right, in a different environment altogether. And the North Woods is very different than Southwestern Ohio. And it was a way to get two schools of thought as well. So there's a dual degree program between Northland College and Michigan Tech. And like, if 3 years at one school, two at the other, and each school will give you a Bachelor of Science in Forestry. So that was attractive, going to a smaller school and then getting to Michigan Tech, which was just big enough to be a, you know, real university, if you will. And both of those are in the middle of the woods. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, I think any of your American universities are way bigger than the Canadians I went to, certainly 70,000, like good Lord.
Yes.
So as you were seeking adventure, I'm just more curious since I know this about you, were you shooting across the various states on the crotch rocket at that point? For our audience, crotch rocket is a motorcycle. I recognize
your
audience. So just in case something got lost in translation, sure. But Mark's an avid, I was surprised by this, but you love your crotch rocket. So was that already at play when you're going to school?
Well, motorcycles are a great adventure, right? And so for all those that do it, please do it safely, wear your gear and ride on the appropriate conditions. And so we can unpack that more. But man, I was in that sad state of in-between motorcycles at that time. So had them growing up, and again, you know, grandfatherly influences helping us along that journey, picking up my first one, but definitely sold before I graduated high school and concentrating on that. Yeah. However, I had a great brother-in-law who, as I was at Michigan Tech, gifted me with a dual sport motorcycle, which is a street legal dirt bike. And that's the perfect bike up there. You know, sport bike is not, you can't realize the benefit of that in the streets up there. And that's, nor is that the place. And so I've since discovered, you're right, street bikes, sport bikes, and the beauty of operating those on the track is an amazing thing. And then, because they just come alive, and you're not taking your safety and really more importantly, other people's safety in your hands at being a hooligan on the streets.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know from chatting with you in the past, you're also paying that forward, teaching, I think, your nephew how to ride and showing him all the ways. I'm sure your family must love that.
So part of my, besides promoting forestry, I try to promote motorcycles to kids if parents will allow, and try and teach them safely. Right. So we do have a little bit of a little dirt bike gang here in the neighborhood, and it's a lot of fun to kind of pass it forward and watch them be really quite proficient at riding and doing so safely.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Safety first. So I know, looking at your profile, that, you know, you did your school, and then you spent quite a few years at, I had to look it up because I know you've told me where you were, where you work, and then there's these acronyms, and then so I looked it up, so you'll have to correct me, but you spent a lot of time at the Center for Environmental Management of Military Lands.
That's correct. Yeah.
MO. So tell me how we got there and what your job was there, or was there positions before you got there that started getting you into that GIS forester role?
Well, continuing on the role of themes, right, or adventures, right? So grad school was an adventure, right? And I was getting towards the near the end of my undergrad and realized, man, I better figure out a way to specialize. I see people who are being recruited, which not everyone was being recruited when they had experience. It's like, what am I really interested in? So I'm a staunch supporter of SAF, South American Foresters, for many reasons, one of which is, they accredited the school I went to. Two, There was a special issue back in the day about remote sensing GIS as applied to forestry. And it's kind of like the light bulb went on. And I was very blessed that my academic advisor happened to be, Dr. Anne McLean was the, remote sensing GIS forester. So I was able to stick around on a project with her for grad school. And that made a huge difference, right?
Yeah.
And so when it came time to leave a wonderful college environment, I got my first real job down in Lafayette, Louisiana. So really just due south and talk about polar opposites from a climatological, from a cultural perspective, and also from a culinary perspective. I mean, total opposites, right? So great friendly people, but quiet and reserved, both seasonings up north, salt and pepper, right? And then of course, cold, right? Yeah. And then everything down south is extroverted, extroverted and spicy. And blessed with some good friends down there. Everyone has to have a Cajun buddy. And the job that I was led down there with was at the USGS Wetland Center doing research. So applying my skills to a myriad of projects from there all the way down to the Florida Keys. So that was a great adventure, trying not to get eaten by alligators. Good
Wow.
times.
Wow. I like
Yeah.
That spicy salt and pepper and spicy.
Yeah.
Love that the analogy. And so while you're studying there, and again, you mentioned the Society of American Foresters. I love how you're saying, oh yeah, I've been a staunch supporter, but this is like support for that's been going on, I think, again, looking at your profile, like 27 years, like
long time.
Since
the 90s.
Yeah. I think it was 92 that I saw that. I was just like, wow, it's like, okay, interesting. It doesn't feel that long ago, and yet we're all young at heart, but it is quite a while ago. But maybe paint the picture for us while you were early in your career, finishing school. What did the technology landscape look like for you as the digital forester?
Doable, but required a lot more effort as a general broad stroke, right? So we could do some great things, but the level of effort it took to get things done was high. However, I was very fortunate where I came in. I remember the talk of punch cards. Fortunately, I didn't have to do those. I also came in and was exposed to ArcInfo and thought that was great, but man, was that laborious having to type out this script to do just a simple thing. And then fortunately, not long after that, ArcView came along. I'm like, well, this is my jam. I'll make this work, right? But ArcInfo had been so developed, there's some things you can only do with that.
You know, we're dating ourselves now because there's
yes.
probably a portion of the audience that are saying like punch
what?
cards, what?
Yes.
Like Arc
Yep.
Info, does that have anything to do with Esri and like Arc View? Like what? I don't understand, but then there's the other audience that'll be like probably rocking out going like, yeah, Arc Info. Yep. I got my AML scripts or Arc View and my Avenue scripts, but it was a different time. And so from a remote sensing point of view, because again, that's part of your skill set, aside from just GIS, what did the landscape look back then compared to what we're seeing today?
Well, that amazes me how far technology's come. So if you and I talk, I think before this conversation's out, you and I can have downloaded a large area of satellite imagery in high detail and have it processed. Just easy, right? Just through an internet connection. That's the caveat. We have to have an internet connection. Well, now again, we're becoming the new old guy. So back in my day, right, the project that I was involved with was producing surface temperature maps of Lake Superior. And that was from AVHRR imagery. So the workflow at best was probably a month process from beginning to end. So that involved making a call to hopefully someone kind enough to ship me the data, which was on a real tape, meaning that it was like a magnetic tape about, this round. And then, so they had to go find it in their library. Don't know if what the quality was. There's no way to preview it. Have them ship it to, hundreds of miles away. Once we got that, then there was to download it, convert it to a mountain tape, which then converted to our PC at the time. And then I remember the processing steps was over, 50 steps, and you had to get them all right. And then you finally had something to look at. So a month compared to 40 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very different.
Yeah. It is. Yeah.
And for those who are listening, just for context, or who those who are not watching, as Mark describes it, he's not like a 7-year-old dude with a big white beard. And like, as he's telling the story, he's still a young guy. So as he says, the new old, I guess
yeah.
I'm part of the new old as well. But for context,
Yep.
it's maybe
Yep.
the newer old category, which just means we're in
Right.
denial, but that's okay. So as we think about that, like again, thinking of your career at SEMO, what were the type of some of the activities and what skills did you have to develop? Because again, you're in an interesting spot where you studied it, you came through the ranks several decades, and as you just described, today is completely different than when we went to school back in the early 90s. But thinking of the job you're doing at SEMO, like, was there a pattern in types of in terms of the technology you had to use, and what skill sets did you have to kind of build up or learn to be able to do that job?
Sure. So let me unpack that a little bit and tell you the scenario. So I was in Louisiana at the time, and my cousin lived here in Virginia, where I'm at now. And he was telling me about this thing about personal property tax he paid on his vehicles each year, and told him, quote unquote, "That's ridiculous. I'm never moving to Virginia." Well, God has a sense of humor, and I'm eating a lot of crow because I do enjoy living here in Virginia, because that's where I met my wife. And it was for that job you mentioned at SEMO. And so it was at a military base. And so a great, maybe untold story about conservation here in the United States is the Department of Defense. And you're like, well, what in the world does that mean? So DOD has environmental stewardship responsibilities for, ballpark 25 million acres, five of which are forested. So that's, quite a few trees to, put into conservation and do multiple things. One, primarily, it's you have to understand who the client is. And so I was hired help to help them manage the forest for multiple objectives. And the first thing to kind of get your mind right is that from a land cover standpoint, sure, there were a lot of trees. But from a land use standpoint, it was a military classroom. And once you make that connection, then the things that don't make sense start to make sense. So managing a military classroom with a few trees in it, with multiple objectives and not prioritizing any of them other than making sure that the military could come and do what they needed to do, so that we all are free to manage trees. So that's a long pause or a long intro to say, this is what it looked like. It looked like working with a team of foresters, we were able to bring in the ESRI technology. And then also, because we were a military base, we were benefited from a lot of agencies. We knew who they were and didn't know who they were in terms of imagery and also LIDAR for the base. So we're bring in the technology and really grow their GIS and actually develop an ecosystem decision support system. And so the point of this was to work with all the ologists, because they all have an important voice at the table, to like, how do we manage this base either actively or inactively, but it needs to be considered for the multiple objectives we have. So like, cultural resources are highly important, right? So we don't want to do an activity, whether it's a military activity or forestry activity or some other activity, that would compromise the historical value of cultural resource, right? And then the same thing for threatened endangered plant species and animal species.
Interesting. And I'm kind of sensing, as you describe that it is a different environment, probably contrary to most of us would appreciate being on the dark side, as I call it, just purely on the industry side, that you have other objectives that you had to balance out. And so with so many stakeholders, and you mentioned LIDAR, then GIS, was the environment, and again, I don't know the American DOD space, again, being in a Canadian here, don't know that apparatus that well, but was it pretty easy to get things done, or did it fit the usual pattern of, all right, we got 20 people around the table, they all have their opinions, and now me, Mark Brooks, has to be the facilitator, the negotiator, the caretaker? Like what was it like to work in that environment?
Yeah, it was a mixed bag. Sometimes everyone wanted to work together, and then there's sometimes where they were just to me, and I'm just the hired help. That was my role, no problem with that. But to me, it was just unnecessary red tape. So on the DoD environment, there are really two important components that need to have buy-off on anything you do with technology, and that's, of course, contracting and then IT support. And had great people in those positions at AP Hill. Sometimes their hands were just tied with what they could offer, because there was much more that we would have liked to have done and just ran into hurdles, whether it's, you know, funding issues or those other limitations.
Yeah, I think funding issues are everywhere for anybody and anyone.
Sure.
So yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So what would be your fondest memory of your time there? What was the one you beat your chest on, all proud, or maybe it's a funny experience? But when you think back to that
sure.
part of your career,
Sure.
what do you remember?
One, you know, there's a good camaraderie with our objectives, and ultimately is the mission that was really important. So at the end of the day, you could grind through those things that weren't fun, because you know you were helping our warriors who were, you know, coming there to train their military edge and then go and do something that was important, right? That was satisfying. Another, in terms of a practical standpoint of what we got to do there and to take care of the base, is prescribed burning and wildfire suppression. And I missed that a great deal. So our prescribed burning plans called for over 30,000 acres a year. And then, you know, that was the plan. We get to about half that, so say 16,000 acres that we lit the perimeter of each year. So you times that by 19, it's quite a few acres that I got to participate in. And what, over that time, you get to see that it's such a great tool for managing the land, and supposedly more of a relic ecosystem before the area was settled by Europeans here in Virginia. That was something that was employed more by Native Americans, and it was a different ecosystem, meaning more savanna-like conditions, whether it's grass or hardwood savannas, even pine, you know, pine savannas. Just, but it's a beautiful landscape.
Yeah, very cool. And so, if I was to do a Google, would I ultimately find a photo of Mark Brooks on a off-road motorcycle that was capable of doing some firework, just kind of racing through the course? And
I've got some pictures to share for you. That is
there you go. I look forward to it. Now while you're all doing this, you were also you know, the president of the Esri Forestry Group, and you've been going on doing that for 15 years and 8 months. So a short journey, I guess. Quite a few years. So tell me, where, because that's a volunteer thing, even though and you correct me if I'm wrong, even though it has the Esri name to it, it's still largely a set of volunteers that are giving their time back to the community to try and curate content and ideas and conversation. So one, set me straight, I guess. What is it, and how did this thing come to be?
Yeah, sure. It's again, great adventure. And so, as much as it was great with my colleagues there at AP Hill, you know, sometimes in order to sharpen your expertise, if you will, you need to hang out at times with people that share the same expertise. So from the geospatial standpoint, I was there at the 2008, I believe, Esri UC. And Peter Erdicks, our good friend, who was with Esri as an, I think, forestry industrial manager, put out a call saying, hey, we'd like to get together a user group for all things Esri technology and forestry. And so myself and Elizabeth Martinez stepped up and said, hey, we would like to be part of the co-founders of this. And so the way I term it is, even though the Esri name's behind it, we are, you know, like executive volunteers, if you will. So just another word for volunteering. So not employed by Esri at all, but it's still true. We've helped with the user group. So that's kind of how it came about. But what is it all about? It's still going on today. So the best way to find us is on our LinkedIn group for now. There should be a hub, an Esri Forestry Group hub coming out soon. But the idea here is, if you've ever gone to a great conference and you like that camaraderie with the Esri UC or whatever, in a way, it's kind of taking that Esri, the conference experience to your desktop, right? And so what I mean by that is, you know, how do you connect with your like peers? And so this is a venue for everyone who's interested in the Esri forestry, you know, Esri technology, trees, and using it to manage their trees, whatever that looks like, a place of camaraderie. And so that really involves a couple of different types of memberships. Obviously, the Esri staff, because they're supportive and want the feedback, to like yourself and myself, solution providers, and then just the users of the technology. Because it really takes all three of us user types to help kind of move the ball forward in terms of implementing the technology.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. Thank you. Thank you for continuing to
Sure.
lead that volunteer group. I know it's often volunteer roles are a thankless job. And so at 15 years, 8 months, thank you for what you're doing.
Sure.
Maybe a question from left field. It just popped in my mind and I'm curious because
Sure.
you mentioned the working on AP Hill and the Department of Defense. So
Oh.
from a GIS point, oh, sorry.
Sorry, I should say, I should update my language. It's a force of habit. I believe it has been renamed recently to Fort Walker.
Ah, Fort Walker.
So
Okay.
that's the official disclaimer, but if I slip, just know it's just a habit of mine. So I'm not
Sure.
quite entrenched to learn the new name yet, but that's
Yeah.
officially what it is. Yep.
There you go. Fort Walker. So formerly known or FKA
Yeah.
as AP Hill
Yep.
there. Thinking of our vintage back then, you know, the open source GIS side, there's something called GRASS that was
Yes.
developed by, I believe, something related to the US military. And you talked about ESRI technology. So while you were working there, was that ever a conversation ever of like, you know, the open source use of GRASS versus ESRI? Was it the usual, you know, one they're always pitted like against each other for some reason when the reality they're probably complementary and addressing different use cases. But was that something, I'm just curious, so like GRASS, was that really anything relevant or meaningful for you in those early days?
Actually, I didn't have to make that decision. ESRI was the tools that were provided. It was a big kind of a big army sale trickle down, if you will. And so that helped because of the necessary permissions, security clearances, if you will, to get a piece of software installed on a military-based computer. Now, I have seen GRASS throughout my career, so I'm familiar with it, but it's, it was probably in the context of someone having a data set in GRASS wanting to bring it into the ESRI technology.
Right. Cool. Thank you for that. So thinking of your journey, and you fill in the blanks if I miss any of
Sure.
the hops there, but if I'm correct, now you're Geospatial Services Manager with Landmark Spatial Systems. So if I haven't missed any other adventures,
Sorry, yeah, that's good, yeah.
that's good. But maybe introduce us to Landmark Spatial Solutions,
Sure.
what they do, and then what your role there is.
Yeah, absolutely. So and I will mention just one little sidestep along the way, but yeah, so a little bit about Landmark Spatial Solutions is that we're a little unique in the fact that we're not tied to any one solution. We're blessed with a lot of business, many, many dozens or more business-to-business solutions. So we're here to help anyone counting trees, trying to do it more efficiently, right? Just trying to set people up for success counting trees. So the funny thing about, I think, about foresters is we all count trees, but we all count them a little differently, right? So you need configurable tools to help in for different workflows. And so I think we have a pretty deep tool chest that we've been blessed with. And essentially, if we like to have a conversation and we can present options on the table that are the best interest for a variety of different reasons for the potential user, and should they purchase something, then we want to make it our mission to set them up for success with the appropriate training.
So thinking of that, I want to buy a forestry truck. I'm going to come to Landmark
Yeah,
Spatial Solutions.
sure. I wish we had trucks or motorcycles, right? we should we
There you
should
go. There
right
you go.
that
So maybe
yeah
thinking of your customer base, just again to help our audiences understand what
Yeah.
Landmark Spatial Solutions does. Is there a pattern of maybe like a top three? You see a pattern of these folks always come to us for their cruising requirements. These folks always come to us for our field gear for vertex ipsometers or something. And these folks are the crazy ones, and they just come with like the next generation ideas and keep us on
Yeah.
our toes. But is there a pattern in terms of, you know, maybe top three or a typical customer for you to help our audience to connect with what you folks do?
We try to help everyone. And so some people were able to do that more than others. And a lot of times it's just folks that don't want to spend a lot of time in technology. They want the quick take on it and our recommendations because we try to test everything or at least be knowledgeable about it to make because we don't want to represent bad stuff to them. So we try to vet it. And so there's an efficiency, hopefully, in that regard. So I think one of our, even though we'll help larger companies, large and mid-sized companies, I think we do have a sweet spot in helping the smaller consulting foresters as well.
Okay. So nowadays, thinking of 2024 for a small consulting forester, what's their pain point with technology, aside from the usual, this is too expensive or this doesn't work or something, but what are you seeing on the consulting forester side for trends and their needs? Is it carbon? Is it all driven by carbon?
Oh, carbon. We should have a good conversation about carbon, shouldn't we? So let's save that. That's a fun topic. A needed one, but a good one. So to me, I'm going to generalize it and say, I think there's many attributes we could specify. Cost is one of them. I feel that the time it takes to implement technology is a challenge. Because people are busy and they need to implement technology that doesn't cost them a lot of time, but yet they need technology to give them consistent results and that's reliable. So I think that's the, without them necessarily saying that, I think that's still a fair assessment.
And so when you describe that, Mark, is there any resistance from the forester in terms of, are the expectations realistic, I guess, in the sense that deploying any new technology requires a bit of investment in terms of the user themselves to learn and train, depending what it is, maybe some hardware infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
Depending what it is, there's different components. Are you finding these foresters, because I always describe it as they already have like five jobs, like they're wearing
yes.
five hats, and now
right.
you're saying,
right.
oh, here's a sixth one and a seventh
right.
one. And they're like, I don't have time for this. I'm already trying to do my five. And yet,
yeah,
you kind of have to wear at least one more hat to get off on the ground and then figure out which of the other five you can maybe get rid of. But are you finding the narrative is changing with these foresters that you work with? And then the following question that, and I've been asking a lot of folks this lately, from the generational side, are you seeing a pattern there in terms of the younger forester versus the new old forester or the just old forester? What are your thoughts on those two?
So let's see. Let's do the first one, the easiest one. Generationally, you know, there's been people, you know, older than us in our age that are adopters of technology. Not a problem, right? But there are some people who are younger than us who act like people who are older than us and say that are resistant to technology. So there are some trends generationally, but I guess I try to treat people on an individual basis, not knowing what I'm going to get and knowing that there's a little bit of, and I mean this respectfully, when it comes to implementing technology, a little bit of life coaching, right? So no matter where they're at, you know, it's an approach of, hey, is this a good decision from you, right? So I try to, I don't want to be the Debbie Downer, but what I do try to do is say, hey, if you're considering the solution, I try to ask them some really upfront questions like, do you have time? And then I say, well, maybe you don't need to be the button pusher, but maybe you need to be the manager. We'll set you up with that. But do you have a technology champion on your team that can help? And oftentimes that person is a younger person, to your point, right? But not always. So while I agree with the trend, it's not quite always true. But and I think maybe what hopefully when people work with me, they see that, hey, hopefully the reason that I'm effective helping them is I'm not necessarily the best. I'm not a technology person for the sake of technology. I'm a forester just trying to work more efficiently. And so I struggle with technology, right? And it's because I've struggled with it, but I'm willing to get through that struggle to use it, that maybe I can mention just something along the way that helps them get off the struggle bus.
Interesting. So thinking in that context, then what is the hot button piece of technology that your customers and the folks you talk to in your network are interested in? Because, you know, we threw that word out, LIDAR, out earlier, but you were doing that like years ago, right? At Fort Walker, formerly known as AP Hill.
Yeah,
they corrected it, but you're doing it a long time ago. Like, I'm going to suspect maybe for the consulting forester or maybe a smaller organization, but truthfully, even a medium and large one, LiDAR could not be part of their vocabulary. Is it drones that are the hot topic? Is it just new tablet cruising software? Is it something else? Is it blockchain technology, Bitcoin's launching for those crypto lovers out there, right? The halving's coming. You know, is that the talk of town with foresters? I suspect not. But what's that piece of tech that you're seeing that's just the thing people can't get enough of right now?
It depends on where the person's coming from. I think all those topics are important. So increased uptake interest in LiDAR for sure. Increased in terms of having the right solution for carbon, right? And we should probably come back to that. Drones are important. Like, what's the right context, right? So people are still learning about drones. People still want to engage, but people are also learning, like, when is this the right tool for the application, right? And there's certain places where it's great. And there's certain places where it's not necessarily the best tool, right? Especially with, again, the satellite imagery that is so accessible now compared to years prior. Yeah. But then for us in particular, we're in a bit of a shift because we have some really good tools that for field inventory collection that are built on the devices that are Windows mobile solutions, right? Great solutions. But now what we're finding is that manufacturers of those are not manufacturing handheld rugged devices, GPS data recorders that are operating on the Windows operating system. So we saw that a couple of years ago. So we wanted to be proactive. And so we have solutions that are now based on Android. So that's been definitely a big push as those units are becoming older, lifecycle replacement type stuff. And then they're trying to thinking about making the switch to our other solutions, which again, were benefited because we didn't have to reinvent the wheel. We were able to be blessed with a different business to business relationship with Woodland Solutions Group and their inventory solutions.
For sure. We had carry on as a kickoff one for season four there.
That was a good one.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so it's funny, you remember there was an SAF event. Steve Weiland was tasked with forecasting what, you know, the 22nd or 25th or who knows century Forester was. And he had, you know, the smart electric Ford truck that came up.
Yes.
And the Forester would deploy a drone right away. And then they'd have their tablet and then the drone would come home. And by the time it came home, it already had mapped out that harvest unit or harvest block. And there's all this stuff. Thinking of that, do you think we as a forestry community have accelerated in that future, or do you think we've kind of just linearly have progressed, or do you think there's really been a step change? What are your thoughts and what have you seen?
Yeah, I'm very familiar with Steve's piece, and I think it's a great piece, right? And I think you could actually do that today, right? I think we're there today. Now, is it productized? No, but the technology is there. If a person wanted to do that, had a use case, I think that's certainly doable. So that, even though maybe that's not the norm, being at the place we are today, that could be the norm by the time frame Steve imagined it, for sure.
Yeah, see, we should totally do that. I should come down. We rent a Ford F-150 Lightning.
Yeah.
Strap on. I'll bring my Starlink. Strap it on top of the roof.
Yeah,
we might need an ATV. We got to be cool, right? Get an electric ATV, a couple of drones, you know, different sizes, and of course we can't forget our cooler. That's the most
important
one there. But so we've kind of danced around the carbon thing, and we've kind of. For those who can't see Mark, because you're listening, every time we mention carbon, Mark makes a little face, and then we'll get to that. So why don't we go there now? Because definitely there's different views when you just mentioned carbon, and so when I say carbon, what does it mean to you?
A couple things on a day-to-day basis. I twitch a little bit because carbon to me is just another word for overly complicated. So in terms of your normal tally screen or tally sheet, tally screen, right? For normal forestry operations, not a problem. But now with every attribute that needs to be collected on a carbon cruise, you basically need to take a laptop out in the woods if you want it all on one page, right? We have solutions with Woodland Solution Group that can handle that, not a problem, but you have to make some concessions, right? But it works. However, but let me zoom back up and say the good news, right? Definitely think that the carbon market is good for forestry. If nothing else, I think it's going to help us keep forests. As foresters, I think that's a primary goal, right? And I don't know if we'll have time to get into this, but I think one of the things that's most important for the forest industry is to find our voice again and re-engage society, because we have a societal license, but if we're not maintaining that relationship, well, there's a reason why we're where we're at, and woefully underrepresented, I think, in important conversations.
Yeah, it's very interesting you mentioned that, because a couple weeks ago I was at the Foresters Forum in Coeur d'Alene, and there was a topic just on the role each of us have as communicators to share what foresters do beyond, you know, 2x4s and toilet paper and Kleenex and stuff like that, but really talk about the day-to-day job, and whether it's educating a taxi driver who's just curious, or hearing something in passing that just isn't accurate, or even that lovely signature, right? Like think of the environment before you print, and I delete that one pretty quick. But as we think about that carbon space, I'm kind of hearing from you, hey, we've got the tools, we can do this already, and now we're just kind of make it more complicated. We also have, you know, the satellite players that kind of mapping and come up with their carbon estimates, and then of course then you go down the spot where, well, how accurate and precise is it? Is there some funny things going along there? But given your background, you know, as a forester, and truthfully a digital forester, what do you think the best path forward is, given some of the challenges that carbon space fits? Because, you know, at some point ESG, that term was powerful, everyone rallied behind it, but today even in other groups that I roll with, ESG, I wouldn't say it's become a dirty word, but it certainly has lost a bit of its power, just given what's happening. But what are your thoughts on that, you know, as you think about carbon? What if you were to look 10 years forward, what would carbon mean 10 years from now?
So I should caveat that I only know it. I'm mentioning a very high level, and also on boots on the ground collecting information. I don't really know the middle part. That's not my strong suit, right? So I'm gonna lean on those who calculate carbon, right? So I can't really speak to that. However, where I think it's important is, you know, again, keeping forests, if it gives landowners another option to help pay their taxes and keep forests, man, why not pursue it? And along the way, if society is becoming more educated about, oh, you mean there's these foresters who actually know something about our environment, and they're steeped in a lot of math skills, and they bring a lot to the table. Think about your jobs that you mentioned. You know, to pat ourselves on the back a little bit, there's a lot that a forester brings to the table in terms of skill sets, right? And so I think respectfully, hopefully, again, kind of informing, educating society that we're here and we're here to help, that's going to go a long way. And I think carbon is one opportunity that we should really embrace for those higher level goals.
Right. And so part of, you know, doing this podcast is talking with like foresters, digital foresters. And in some cases, people I talk to, they say, well, you know, I'm on the technology, so I'm not really a forester. And yet, again, just working this space, I think, you know, we don't beat our chests. You know, I'm not a trained forester, but I've been at this for 18 years. And while I may not know things in the weeds, you kind of absorb it, and foresters do like to teach and mentor and share. So you kind of pick things up organically. But if you were to look out, let's say 5 years out, what does the landscape look like from a technology point of view? What are those things that you're thinking about right now, especially as you describe Landmark Spatial Solutions as somebody, you know, blessed with a treasure chest of various types of technologies that you can offer to your customer base? Are there certain areas, you know, are you looking to grow that treasure box, add a couple levels? But where's your thinking in terms of technology and where it's going, at least in the midterm, that 5-year mark? What's on your radar?
A couple things in general, listening to what our clients need, and if we need to expand, happy to entertain those ideas. You know, who do we partner with, right? Because it's all about them at the end of the day. That's our goal, is to make sure that they're successful. Because their success is really our success, and it's just unfortunately sometimes along the way we gotta bill them so we can keep our lights on. But that's our priorities. We want to see them be successful, right? And so along the way, as we do that, we want, I think, strategic partnerships. And I think that's why I was such an advocate for Esri. And I try to explain to people, this is the way I view it, and this is part of the reason why it's pretty easy to do the volunteer gig with the Esri Forestry Group, is that the mission of forestry and I think the mission of Esri are the same, in that they just want to make the world a better place, right? And so to me, what do forestry need? What does forestry, the profession, need more than anything right now? And do we need technology? Yes. And we need to keep refining it, not a problem. And we need to do so in such a way, and to answer your question, I think it's refinement to where it's easier to uptake, right? We don't need to take 3 hours to explain something where maybe we can get it down to about a half hour, to where, you know, we're confidently, we've removed some of the challenges, the complexity, but still offering the solution, right?
Right, so
But
make it easy.
yeah, making it easier, right? Just the continual refine, just like now. It's so much easier to download a satellite image than back in my day. So
Yeah.
I see that continuing. And I think that'll be a good thing. So, but the partnerships are important. So I hope that technology will be used to help foresters tell our story. And do wherever your audience is, whether it's somebody next door, or if you can network with someone like, say, Esri, who's a software company but wants to make the world a better place, and they are world influencers, right? And so they've been very kind to forestry and have us on the big stage with J.D. Irving at the plenary, the UC plenary, right? So that's big. That's big.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, certainly Jack from Esri's, investing,
Yep.
and there's been champions there. You mentioned Peter Erdicks, which, by the way,
That's
Peter,
right.
if you're listening, you're on
That's
my cross list there. It's like you haven't responded yet, but we'll get him
that's
on at
right.
some point. Now, for those who may not know you, like, again, I've known you for several years now. You're just a down to earth, humble, but like nice guy. And I remember at an Esri user
Appreciate that.
conference,
Thank you.
you brought some students. You're actually, I can't remember the term you need, but you're kind of their guide for the chaotic
Yeah.
Esri user conference.
Yeah.
And what does that mean to you when you do that? Because again, it's something, again, knowing you, it didn't surprise me when you introduced me to the young gentleman. I was like, oh yeah, it's totally Mark Books, like a Mark Books thing, absolutely kind of thing. But as you look forward, like being the new old, or us being the new old,
Yes. Yeah.
what's important in your role in
Yeah.
your profession, your career, personally, professionally, like what's important to you looking forward?
Well, we're making progress again. A couple. Let me answer two ways. A few years ago, here in Virginia, we have some great extension agents. So Jennifer Gagnon, I've learned this little shtick, this insight from her. So a few years ago, say 8 years ago, she did this experiment, went to Google and just did a search on Forrester. And what page do you think that we landed on? Like 26 or 30. So which means that in this today's world, we don't exist, right? And of course, all the other pages were filled with the fine automobile made by Subaru. No problem. Well, in preparation for today, I was like, well, let me refine that. And it's over time I've noticed we've gotten closer to the front page, and we're on the front page. Now, maybe just this morning, it's a Wikipedia. So I encourage you to do that. Just from time to time, just Google the word forester. And now at least a Wikipedia entry is there on the first page. Maybe it's the bottom of the first page, but I mean, in this Google search world, that's something, that's a measurable something, right? Now, you know, there's to me, if we look at growth and yield models, there's an equation about, there's little letters that go along with what is and what's died, but there's something at the beginning of that equation, that I, and that I stands for end growth, right? So for me now, I've always appreciated it when people invested in me and my career, and I've been blessed with a lot of people that have done that. And so I really get a lot of joy out of doing that now for students, because that's the future of our profession. And you know, so it's just one of those joys to see a young person where they're at. And if I can help, give them some positive feedback or help them expand their network and help them flourish in their career that promotes forestry, well, that's success. You know, that our forestry, you know, profession is in good hands.
100%, 100%. So on that note, I love to ask this question because a lot of people say, why do you ask it? And I say, well, sometimes it stumps the person I'm asking. But what advice would you give a younger Mark Books? Like thinking you described many adventures when you were a kid, being the navigator in the car, to your journey through school and different experiences and experiencing the spicy life down south. But thinking of where you are, and again, for context, you're not an old dude. It's like, you're not a white haired, gray haired dude. It's like, you still got many years on there. Yeah. And thinking back, like what advice, is there a piece of advice you would give yourself knowing what you know today?
Yeah. I think learning some of the softer skills, it kind of goes back to where we find forestry, and we've done this to ourselves. We like you people, but we're going to go in the woods and we're not going to talk to you. That had to stop. Right. So the sooner I realize that, the better. I wish I would have realized it sooner, but I also wish that I would have insisted professionally on having conversations that were fair, honest, and respectful. Right. And here's kind of what I want to unpack that just a little bit. Like, I think in a broad term, I'd say I would have liked to have learned conversational forestry.
Tell me more.
So what I mean by that is learning to tell our story, because we have a great story, right? But then also being able to handle the feedback that's oftentimes negative, and those negative people are showstoppers, right? So learning how to have those, just if we can all agree to have fair, honest, and respectful conversations, I think we can go a long way to agreeing that someone might have a legitimate complaint about a particular episode in life, but that's not necessarily the heart of forestry. So what kills me is when we now have to say, well, this is sustainable forestry. I'm like, well, wait a minute. If you look at the very definition of forestry, it is sustainable. So if we can ever get to the fact that people know where foresters are, we're there to serve them, you know, providing, you know, clean water, renewable natural resources in the context of the greatest good, the greatest number in the long run, right? So granted, we are agents of change, if you will, but we'd like to help people understand that that is a positive thing. So that's kind of a little bit of the soapbox I'm on these days, I try to be respectfully insistent on that. So I won't engage in people if I know that I'm not going to have a respectful conversation. I mean, I want to, not that they have to come away thinking like I do, but I would like to have a valid conversation where the merits of forestry are on the table and at least dutifully considered. Put that way.
Yeah, absolutely. It can't be a one-way conversation, especially not one where someone's berating you or yelling at you. And it's a topic that, truthfully, you know, this podcast won't cover, but I suspect some other one will. But it's that connotation, I think, that you hear forestry. You know, what's top of mind when someone thinks that, because I often struggle with that as well, being, you know, working in the forestry tech space, you and I together. But like when someone says agriculture, right, positive feeling, it's like, oh, grow food, right? And you hear forestry,
and it is great, but sedimentation wise there's a factor of 10 more sedimentation from our agricultural fields, which we need.
100%.
Not saying we don't need it, right?
100%. But why do people's perception go to the, oh, grow food versus, you know, forestry, the negative? They always go to the negative versus the all the benefits, right? Like ecosystem services that provide clean air, you know, that's one that, you know, someone smarter than us will probably have to write a PhD on or something like that. But
it does come into your podcast in the hopes that technology will help us tell our story, so that we have better interactions with our society we serve.
Yeah, 100%.
That's my point. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. I know I did one a couple of weeks ago from folks down under. And then I remember one of them asked me a question like, why do you do this? And like, what do you get out of it? And my response was, I just get to talk with really cool people, like cool men, cool women that, you know, can shape and influence my own thinking. And I can probably learn something about that individual, their company, their worldview. And certainly with the podcast, with this global footprint, it's quite fascinating to hear the different views. And to your point, not everyone has to agree. Like, again, you're very pro history. You know, Europe is very pro open source, and that's okay, right?
Yeah.
100%, 100%. So, hey, as we look to wind down, because I have this strict rule, I always get everyone in and out in 60 minutes because everyone's busy. But I really enjoy catching up with you and hearing your thought process and definitely hearing, I can sense, you know, you're killing it in this position as geospatial services manager at Landmark Spatial Thank Solutions. But for folks who want to get a hold of you, because if you haven't sensed, Mark is big on partnerships, you know, talking, conversations, and certainly his company that he works with, Landmark Spatial Solutions, has a lot of technology for the daily forester. But what's the best way for folks to get a hold of you?
Probably on our website. All of our contact information is there, and a plus many of the solutions we provide. So landmarkspatialsolutions.com.
There you go, folks. That's the easiest way to get a hold of Mark and his colleagues and his team. So, hey, I'm looking forward to seeing you at some event. I don't know which one it'll be this year, but
maybe the Ezra UC.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. Okay. Absolutely. That's we seem to see each other there every year. And then maybe there's some other ones we'll see each
hopefully
other. Oh, yeah. But but yeah, hey, good seeing you. Good talking with you. You know, say hi to your wife on my behalf. I know I met her a couple of years ago. Yes. Definitely the better half, I'm sure, right?
Yes. I'm married up.
There you go. So definitely thanks for your time. I look forward to seeing you around.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks for what you're doing to help tell the forestry story here after your podcast. Appreciate it.
Good stuff. Cheers.